Now, Mr. Greiner was in on board a plane as an instructor June 10th of 2016 at the then Williamson County Airport. And then you had on board, were you teaching, instructing that day?
Yes, yes. And John Allman was with me. I was actually with him. It was his airplane.
Right. What were you flying that day?
Well, it was a Cirrus SR-20.
One of the newer ones.
Yes, it's considered a high-performance, low-wing aircraft. It's a real nice airplane. And he had it for quite a while. And John and I had flown together numerous times. But, yes, I was giving him some instruction that day. Now, he was current. He was actually what we call PIC. He was pilot in command, but I was the instructor.
His ticket was updated. His ticket was properly
dated. Actually, it was all current, yeah. Yes. Had it not been, then I would have been what they call PIC, but I actually wasn't, even though I was the instructor.
How long have you been an instructor? Because here's the thing, and I don't think people always know this, Todd. There are not a lot of yous around. There's fewer and fewer all the time when it comes to general aviation.
That's true.
Fewer and fewer instructors. How long have you been?
24 years.
That's
I've been flying for 27, been an instructor for 24.
And most of them, are all of them here in Southern Illinois?
You know what? I did all my instructing at the Williamson County Airport, what it was then.
Right.
It's now Veterans.
Veterans Memorial Airport.
Yes.
So, you know, whenever I got the first reports at 4:30 and then the people who had seen what was going on, I had gotten the impression you were doing touch-and-goes, that you were practicing touch-and-goes, but that's not the case.
We started off doing touch-and-goes and then asked permission to go climb up to 3,000 and do what's called an engine-out procedure, which is just training a person who, he has done them before, but he just kind of wanted some current training on it, and you're simulating losing your engine and being able to take the plane down and land it without having to put in any power. Of course, you don't turn the engine off. You just pull the power back, glide down, and that's what we were doing when this happened.
And something happened. Something went wrong?
Yeah, we don't know. We really don't know. I remember absolutely nothing of that day, and actually for about 2 months after, my memory is just about all gone.
So you've had to have people kind of relive everything that you went through, including the incident itself. You've had to everything through somebody else's.
Absolutely. There was Lee Doty was the controller at the time, and he saw the accident happen. There was another lady who was driving near the airport who also saw it happen. I haven't talked with her, but Lee told me everything that he saw. But, yes, I know nothing. I remember absolutely nothing of it.
This is one of the things about the FAA. They never speed a report out. They never have.
That's true.
Have you seen the report yet?
It just came out.
Yeah?
Yes.
What did, how did you?
Well,
it's not so much, you can't know everything is the fact.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. You know, tragically, Mr. Allman perished in the crash. So he's gone, and that was the absolutely most tragic thing of the whole thing.
To lose a friend.
And
like
I
that,
was
yeah.
I was injured very seriously, and I remember nothing. So the FAA had so little to go on. Now, his plane was more of a modern plane and had modern instrumentation.
Now, correct me for a second, Todd. I thought these Cirrus units were the ones with the packed-in parachutes.
Well, yes, but that's only used when you have to be at least about 2,000 feet above the ground.
Right, and that's not the case here.
No. Now, it was ignited. It did, you know, it has like a rocket in it that shoots that out. But it happened when it hit the ground.
Right.
It wasn't pulled to try to save the aircraft. It wouldn't have anyway.
Yeah. Not enough time to stop.
Yeah. So, I mean, the FAA basically what they said was there was control lost of the airplane. I mean, there's a speculation of what might have happened, but nobody really knows for sure. That's not a new maneuver that I have ever done. I've done them hundreds of times over the years, and I had done it before with John Allman. But I don't know. I don't know what happened that day.
Here's the thing. You don't know, and for good reason. Severe traumatic brain injury.
Yes.
And also, it looks like you took a pretty good it looks like the stick hit you in the chest and probably your head came into contact with the canopy, maybe?
Well, I don't know. In that airplane, there was two. Of course, he had a stick on the door, on the left door, and mine was on the right door. So there was no stick in front of us.
Wait a second. That's right. These have the units literally built in where there's a stick off to your right. It's not
dead
center.
Yes, there is no stick, and there is no yoke, but it's very extremely sensitive. But so, as far as what injured me, I have no idea. If you see the pictures of the crash, it was absolutely totally destroyed.
So you landed somewhere around 90 or 110 miles an hour, 70?
It had to be over 100.
Under 100? Okay.
Yes.
I knew we were in the ballpark. I think this is one of the things that people who aren't into aviation may not get. You're in a car doing a great deal faster than a car, with less protection than a car, and then the added benefit of gravity and being above ground by 30, 40 feet, 50 feet, 100, whatever it is.
Exactly.
That there's multiple XY axis that the energy comes at you from.
Oh, absolutely.
And the human body really is designed to do about 5 miles an hour. And
yeah,
you were doing a little bit faster.
Oh,
than that.
It was. Matter of fact, Lee Doty, who did see the accident, told me months later when we did talk, he said, "Todd, when I saw the accident, I knew that nobody was going to be alive. I knew nobody could live through that." And then when the emergency units got there and word was passed on to him, there is someone alive, and they flew me out, he couldn't believe it, that there was actually somebody that survived that. And Tom, something else that was absolutely miraculous with this, that morning, John topped off the fuel tanks. So they were absolutely topped off. And the percentage of aircraft that crash, that have fuel and burn, is very high. And someone else told me, a couple other people that were there at the site, you could smell fuel everywhere. And Tom, no fire. It did not explode. Grace of God, it was miraculous that did not happen.
Because there's one thing, and the first one I saw was a no gear landing at Harrisburg-Raleigh Airport. And I've never seen so many sparks.
Yeah.
And I didn't know aluminum could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah. See, that Cirrus unit, if I remember, the outside cowlings and all the bodies are carbon fiber and plastics.
Yes, composite, yes.
So that reduced, but still the superstructure.
Yes, absolutely.
Which gets peeled away pretty quick.
Yes. And Tom, the engine, because of the pictures I've seen, I'm not going by memory, the engine was underneath the left wing, what was left of the left wing. So, I mean, it was shattered, and the opportunity for sparks everywhere was there.
Oh, gosh,
and
yes.
And I mean, it was just, that was the very first miracle that happened.
My first thought is there before the grace of God.
Yes, absolutely.
That particular case, because especially when you're topped off on the tanks. I mean, you just have to be a novice now to be watching and say, well, we didn't want to land the 747 until we burned all the fuel off.
Yeah.
I mean, people literally hear it in news coverage.
Yes, right.
Of course, that not being an option for you.
Right.
Losing a friend like this, it's got to be hard. You had the physical injuries. And I look at you, man, I see a guy who's bright and great eye contact and communication skills, and you're walking well. I mean, pal,
it's
a year,
miraculous.
You've done, wow.
It's so miraculous. And
I mean, consider you had a broken jaw.
Well, I had all kinds of things. Yeah, I mean, that was just part of it.
Blood-filled lungs,
you know,
from the trauma
I did,
there.
I did. As a matter of fact, another man, his name is Dan Stowers, and Dan flies with the air evac unit. And there's just so many things. You know, there's no luck involved. It's just the grace of God. But the helicopter at air evac had just landed. So when they called and said, hey, we need you over here, if they had gone out and had to start the helicopter up from just a cold start, the rotors have to spool up.
Yeah.
They have to get spinning.
Right.
And that takes minutes for that to happen. Well, they just landed. And actually, the rotors were still spinning. So when they jumped back in, they didn't near have to take as much time as they normally would. And when they got over there, Dan intubated me. And he told me later, this is again months later when I met him, and we both broke down in tears, but he said, Todd, let me tell you, he said, I saved your life by the grace of God, because you were drowning in your own blood. And Tom, I have what was called a Lafort fracture. That's when your facial bones separate from your skull. And I had broken mandible here. My jaw was broken. My palate was broken. And yet, it's so difficult to intubate somebody to begin with. And he intubated me first try. And he said, Todd, if I hadn't been there for another minute or 2 minutes at the most, you would have drowned in your own blood.
Right.
So another miracle by the grace of God.
Wow.
And then there's just all kinds of stories like that with it.
It's like you went through the eye of a needle. with just there were no margins for error on either
That's
side.
Well said.
When you come through, you can't go one way or the other on the crash. Sparks, the concussion, the sheer energy that was imparted in your body.
Yes.
The fact that you were so severely injured, treating you could have hurt you even worse. When you talk about being intubated,
yes.
You know, taking a pipe,
yes,
a tube,
exactly.
And putting it through an orifice that has nothing but fractures around it,
yes,
into two bags of air that are filled with water that are literally paper thin.
That's true. That's so true.
And all I can say is, wow.
Yeah, and Tom,
I know why your wife's smiling back. You know how lucky you are that we still got this guy.
Yeah, it was just the grace of God. And my wife, she stood by me. She was such a rock. She was so precious. And Tom, when they got me to the hospital and rushed me into emergency surgery, then I clinically died. I died twice, and they couldn't get me. My heart started by conventional means, and so what they did, they did a thoracotomy on me.
Yeah,
and that's when they cut you open.
They cracked your chest open,
and they took the rib out and reached into my chest and physically pumped my heart.
Yeah.
And by the grace of God, got it going. And there again, another just tremendous miracle of God that happened.
I would think at that point, with the fluid in your lungs, the fluid that was probably building up in your pericardium, your heart was unable to pump. And even when they electrocuted, they didn't go through the water levels to be able to get to the muscle. So that took a physical manipulation to keep your heart going, which, of course, is why you can look at me straight in the eye today and not, you know, be going, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of
Yeah.
So you said this a couple of minutes ago, and it caught my attention. It wasn't luck.
No, no, no.
A lot of people, Todd, you know, would assign these values to luck.
Oh, I know it. I know it. And then they say, boy, Todd, you were lucky. Well, for one thing, to show you the impossibility of luck, even if it happens, and I don't believe in luck, but there might be, you might be lucky and win the lottery, okay? But that might be one little event. There was a series of events. Those series, and like you said it so well, through the eye of the needle, those series of events was absolutely orchestrated by God. There's just no way. And Tom, I could tell you so many stories, but with my traumatic brain injury, they rate them, and there's a number scale, and they rated mine from a 3 to an 8, which at the worst was just completely incapacitated, basically, and at best, severe disabilities.
Right.
So that's what they saw. They saw if I lived, and they didn't think I was going to live. It was really touch and go.
I got to tell you, Todd, see, we're covering the news, and I'm an aviation person. Right?
Yes.
And I was watching more than a little closely. And I can give you my personal assurance that more than once we reported in the morning about, you know, we're all watching. I mean, it was a long time because I was watching you. I didn't know you. I didn't mean I didn't care about
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
You're in the aviation community, and I think I associate myself with that, even though I'm on a radio and never fly anymore. But, But this luck, and you're saying, look, it can't be luck. And this is part of the thing that I think people struggle with sometimes. Once upon a time, there were people who were scared, and they were hiding in the caves, and they thought, you know, did you hear something? I don't know. Did you hear something? And they went outside, and they thought, wow, there is something that's trying to kill us. And something told us, or we heard something, and we assigned value to that. And we thought, you know, there's something out there in the universe that's looking out after me. And we've always tried to grapple with this. And some people want to assign it to math. Coincidences.
Yeah.
That X number of crashes, there's going to be some survivors, no matter how much it is. But I think once you're there, you have a sense of it that you may not be able to touch it or feel it, but you see its results.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, we absolutely did. It was just amazing. And, you know, the Bible makes it really clear. And I believe with all my heart in Jesus Christ. And had I died, Tom, I knew I was going straight to heaven. I knew that. My wife knew that. But by the grace of God, He has let me live. And, you know, people have asked me, why did He let you live?
Done with you.
No, but I tell you what, every opportunity I get to share what He did, I take it. And, you know, when I've been asked in a lot of churches, I've gone to a couple schools and shared, and I tell people, this is really not my testimony. This is a testimony of Jesus Christ and his tremendous grace and love. And I didn't deserve it. It's undeserving. And why he chose, why he did that with me, I'll never know. I'll never know. But he did it. And like you've been saying so well, it had nothing to do with luck at all.
It's weird that, you know, that I can, I kind of consider myself an amateur scientist. I think you probably do too, because everybody I've met in aviation does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you don't know someone, especially instructors, pilots with air instructor tickets, talk about an anal retentive lot. I mean, you're out there, you're checking both wings, you're checking the tanks for water, you're going around, you're touching everything, you're looking at every cotter pin, you go, you do a walk
yes.
around, you pull it open, you check the oil, you make sure there's no water in there, you go around, you make every cotter pin on every single surface is under control, you get in, you do your pre-flight, you run it up to X number of RPMs, you make sure everything's all right, and then you check again.
Yes, very thorough.
And those kind of people, quite frankly, wish more people did that before they got in their cars. You take these kind of people who are very rational, very practical people, have to be, and then they suddenly find out that you assign some of your safety and value and quality to something that you can't see. I think that blows people's minds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because you are so ultimately practical while at the same time give yourself up to something that some people choose not to believe in.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know where I'm going with that exactly, but I see it every day.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those people that say, no, you just don't understand. It was math.
No.
What do you say to those people?
No. I say, well, whether you understand this or not, I know beyond anything it was the grace of God. It was through Jesus Christ that I'm alive and that I'm here. His miracle hand was upon me, and there is no doubt to that. My wife could testify to that. And Tom, we've shared a few things here, but I was in the hospital for 4 months. And through that time, especially the first two months, there was just all kinds of things that happened with me. But the grace of God was seen over and over.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a real privilege in more than one way to be able to see you today. I fortunately, during my lifetime, I've had a brush with a similar incident and with a family member.
Hmm.
And I was often startled at the fact he says, I don't remember anything. This is a guy who remembers everything, saying, I don't remember anything. He's, you know, and he waited for his report and still really kind of unclear of what happened.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop him from getting back in the cockpit because of the sheer joy that he gets from it. You too?
You know what? 8 months after the crash, I flew again, and it was exhilarating. I'll be honest, there was a little bit of anxiety. But I couldn't let that stop me, and I went up, and it was great. It was like I hadn't missed a day. And I flew actually a couple of times, and I had my own airplane, flew it, and I started instructing again. And then, Tom, the FAA grounded me on the basis that on my traumatic brain injury, they don't believe that I'm doing as well as I say I'm doing, and that's okay. But they, you know, what they saw was that, no, you can't have a brain injury that bad without something coming back. And nothing has, but they said, no, we're going to keep you grounded for a minimum of 4 years,
Oh. And
then we're going to see what happens after that. And, you know, that's just what they got to do. I'm not complaining. I'm disappointed, but I'm not discouraged. And so be it.
I'm so glad to have met you.
It's great meeting you, Tom.
I knew I've been looking forward to this all week. It's interesting because I'd mentioned you were coming on, and all your friends called and said, no, you're mispronouncing his name. It's Grinder without a D. And I'm like, thank you, Roger Leip, among others.
Yeah,
I love Roger.
He's a great guy.
But it made me realize that just because I didn't know you, that a lot of other people did, and they're very happy about you still being around too, pal.
That's great. That's great.
Best of luck, and to your wife, too.
Thank you so much.
And God
much.
Bless. I, you know, this is an interesting story, and I so often hear people hesitate to talk about these things in public now, increasingly so. Especially the faith element. You find you see people resisting.
Well, I know there's a lot of people like that. I haven't really felt so much resistance from my story from people.
Right.
Because, I mean, there is not, I totally share it without any reservation. But I think people really look at me and think, wow, he's got to be telling the truth. I mean, there's just more to this than what I'm thinking. So I just thank God for the opportunities to just speak how great God is and what he did.